You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, editorial director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Sarah Colmer about diagnosing and managing a warm blood with a myopathy. This episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Colmer is a large animal internist and neurology fellow at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine's New Bolton Center in Kennett Square. She completed her residency in large animal internal medicine at New Bolton Center, as well as a rotating internship in medicine and surgery. She has research interests in neurologic conditions of the horse, particularly degenerative diseases. Thank you, Dr. Colmer, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So at New Bolton Center, your team sees a large number of sport horses that come in for various performance issues, but sometimes the root cause isn't a problem with their central nervous system or a lameness. It's a myopathy or a muscle disorder. I would love for you to share one of those cases with us today and how it unfolded.
Yeah, that's a great point. Honestly, we see a lot of different performance issues, and sometimes we see truly spinal cord disorders, for example, in which horses present with intermittent stumbling or horses that catch a foot or fall down even. We also see horses that initially present to the neurology service but end up having a lameness, for example, that blocks out to the foot or to the hock or what have you. And yet there's this kind of like third category of disease that sometimes presents to our neurology service, other times presents to sports medicine or even the surgery service, which involves horses that have kind of vague poor performance, things like just not having as good of exercise tolerance as they used to. These are often horses that present at more of a middle age, around, you know, 8, 9, 10 years of age, that just don't have a lot of gas in the tank all of a sudden. They might be reactive to their rider's leg pressure. They might be anxious when they're asked to collect or extend, all sorts of different things, or shifting limb lamenesses. Sometimes horses present for simple lamenesses. Other times they present for true primary neurologic disease where they're stumbling and falling. But we can often see horses present for true muscle disorders that can be all sorts of different vague poor performance issues that they present for. And we know that obviously muscles are an important part of the musculoskeletal system and are all over the horse and can be really important. And you asked about a case example, and we recently actually saw a 10-year-old warm blood gelding who had a history of just suddenly not wanting to move forward off of his rider's aids, especially leg pressure. And he would get very, very anxious when she would ask him to collect or even extend at the canter. He would kind of balk and just kind of suck behind her leg, she would describe. And she brought him in for evaluation with the sports medicine and neuroservices, thinking that, you know, maybe there was a lameness or maybe some ataxia. And he had a history of not being able to be blocked out in his lameness. He had kind of a right forelimb lameness and then a left hind limb lameness, but nothing ever major to explain his clinical signs. And ultimately, to kind of cut to the chase for his exam, we were watching a horse go around on a lunge line that just got very, very anxious when he was asked to canter in any capacity. And he would pin his ears and he would grimace and he just looked uncomfortable. And so one of the interesting things, I think, is that we take the time to ask our clients, you know, do you feel like there's an element of discomfort in your horse's poor performance? So that's something that can be really helpful when we're thinking we might be dealing with a myopathy, because oftentimes at its core, myopathy results in discomfort. So that's kind of an interesting thing that we see in these cases. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so this guy, we ended up explaining to the owner that we didn't really see a blockable lameness. We saw a little bit of a right forelimb lameness at times, but nothing major. And he wasn't clearly ataxic, but he just looked really uncomfortable and resentful, and also wasn't very well muscled on his physical exam, which is something we can see in horses with different myopathies. And ultimately, this guy was diagnosed with something called myofibrillar myopathy. So myofibrillar myopathy is kind of a new kid on the block, I think. I'm sure he's always been there. But Dr. Stephanie Valberg, who's kind of the guru of equine muscle disease, more recently describes this condition in the last handful of years. And it used to be called PSSM type 2. It used to kind of fall under that category of diseases. But she's learned that this disease involves a very specific protein called desmin, which is important for organizing myofibers, essentially. So at a molecular level, it's really important for the muscular structure. And horses with MFM have kind of like a disarray in that protein. And horses with MFM often have this history of kind of vague poor performance or unblockable lameness and reluctance and even all sorts of behavioral things that we can initially work up for all sorts of other body systems and ultimately strike out and kind of arrive at the suspicion of a muscle disorder.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? Dechra Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. Dechra provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.dechra-us.com to discover how Dechra can be your partner in equine health.
So this gelding, when we realized, you know, kind of what was in front of us and we had suspected myofibrillar myopathy, it was important for us to take the time to talk with this owner and kind of make sure that other causes of pain and discomfort were ruled out. We knew that he didn't have a significant lameness. He had been scoped for gastric ulcers, which we know can also be a really common cause of discomfort and reluctance and reactivity to leg pressure and those sorts of things. And there was no other obvious source of pain and discomfort. And we had talked to her about diagnostics, and myofibrillar myopathy, unlike some other muscle diseases, doesn't have a genetic test that we can, you know, submit some mane hairs for easily. Unfortunately, it requires a little bit more of an invasive test, and in this case, a muscle biopsy. So this owner was very keen to get to the bottom of what might be causing her horse discomfort. She's already spent a ton of time and money and emotion kind of working him up until this point. And so she was very dedicated to whatever we had suggested next, which was the biopsy procedure. And I think some owners can understandably be a little bit reluctant when they hear, you know, muscle biopsy. It sounds a little bit scary. It sounds invasive. And in truth, it is a little bit invasive because we are taking a piece of muscle, but most horses do really well with this procedure. It's done standing, so no anesthesia is necessary. For most horses, they tolerate it very well standing. And we will typically pursue this procedure with the horse in standing stocks. Of course, you know, in university, we have those at our disposal. On the farm, though, sometimes you have stocks or like a Dutch door, for example, that the horse can stand in front of to protect the operator. Other horses will be fine without any sort of barrier, but we do recommend, you know, trying to use stocks if they're available or a Dutch door type thing. And the muscle biopsy is taken from one of two locations. So we used to look for diseases like MFM or PSSM with the semimembranosus, semitendinosus, or the hamstring muscle at the hind end, kind of just below the tail a bit. And that was done with an incisional technique, meaning traditional, you know, scalpel to the skin and sub-Q, and you're physically extracting kind of a little block of muscle that way and then suturing it up in two layers. But more recently, Dr. Valberg describes something called the Bergstrom muscle biopsy technique that we've adopted, where we use a special instrument. So it does require the purchase of a special piece of equipment called a Bergstrom biopsy needle. And it is taken from the middle gluteal muscle rather than the semis. So we're kind of up at the hindquarters of the horse, not necessarily behind and under the tail. We're kind of off to the side of it. And her website kind of, you know, gives a step-by-step description on how to do this biopsy. But essentially, you block a small area in a specific location in the region of the gluteals, make a very small incision in the skin and subcutaneous tissue, and stick this needle instrument 3 inches into the horse and collect what I refer to my students as a sausage of tissue. It kind of chops little pieces of muscle and creates a little sausage that you push out at the end onto your field for submission, essentially. And although it sounds a little bit intense. It is extremely quick. The horses tolerate it exceptionally well. Knock on wood, we've had very minimal to zero complications associated with this procedure. And it's typically one or two sutures in the skin, and they are all good to go. We give them a couple, 1 to 2 days off, and then theoretically they can go right back into work. So it's not something that is a tremendous ask of them. And once that biopsy is obtained, we also give the horse, I should say, a dose of butorbanamine, some sort of anti-inflammatory, just so they, don't feel too sore afterwards. And then we submit the muscle to Dr. Valberg's laboratory. So she has the only laboratory in the country that reads these out. And when she receives the muscle, in order to diagnose myofibrillar myopathy, she stains these tissues with a very specific set of stains and looks very specifically for something called Desmin aggregation. And as you might remember from the earlier part of this discussion, Desmin is that protein that's important for the structure of the muscle fibers. And so these horses have a disarray of their Desmin that can cause discomfort and the clinical signs associated. One of the great things about this disease and that we always tell our clients is one of the reasons to do this biopsy and look for this disease is there is something we can do about it. So unlike other conditions, especially in my line of work of neurology, where we might make a diagnosis that doesn't necessarily have a lot of intervention, this disease does have, it's not something that can be cured, I should say. It doesn't go away, but it can be managed with a combination of diet and exercise recommendations. And so I can kind of get into those in a second, but the muscle biopsy is, again, not very difficult to do. I've taught friends over FaceTime. I teach students all the time, but it's something that can certainly be done. And there are resources on Dr. Valberg's website, including videos and kind of step-by-step instructions for any vets that are looking to kind of add that to their skill toolbox. It's kind of a fun procedure to do. And importantly, not too much on the horse. And so once we get those results back, if they are positive for myofibrillar myopathy, as they were in this gelding's case, we were really excited to tell this owner, hey, we have something that we can address. We have an intervention, multiple interventions we can try, and I can go through those interventions now. Essentially, myofibrillar myopathy, although it won't be cured, it can be decrease in terms of the severity of the clinical signs for many horses if a couple different changes are made to the diet and exercise. And so starting with diet, and I should say, I usually connect owners of these horses with nutritionists. I am not a nutritionist. I certainly don't claim to be. And half of the management changes are nutrition-based. So I do recommend that folks connect with a nutritionist. Usually in the summary of results from Dr. Valberg's lab, she'll actually have a contact information for a nutritionist, but there are a couple others out there as well, of course. And so the mainstay of sort of the nutritional aspect is to work on increasing certain amino acids. So the Desmin aggregation is thought potentially to be a consequence of something called oxidative damage. And I think we all remember back in our high school or college biology classes, learning about the mitochondria being the powerhouse of the cell and that process of cellular respiration that creates energy. A byproduct of that is oxidative damage or free radicals that bop around and cause all sorts of damage at a cellular level. And that can manifest in all sorts of different neuromuscular and otherwise problems for horses, people, et cetera. And so if that's at the basis, one of the things we can try to do is kind of combat that oxidative damage. And certain amino acids are thought to be sort of imbalanced in these horses. And so there is something called the MFM pellet, myofibrillar myopathy pellet, which is formulated to kind of supplement some of those amino acids, cysteine, acetylcysteine, and things like that, which can help some of these horses. So we typically put them on the MFM pellet as part of their dietary change. And then with regard to the nutritionist, they will usually focus on targeting hay with a non-structural carbohydrate content of around 15%. We typically will try to shift these horses to higher protein energy sources, things along those lines. There are more details than this that can be pursued with the assistance of a nutritionist, but a couple changes to kind of like the source of energy and supplementing with those amino acids. We typically will also put these horses on vitamin E, which is another antioxidant to help with that oxidative damage, and coenzyme Q10, which is yet another antioxidant. So really just trying to combat that oxidative damage that we think is at the core. And Dr. Valberg also talks about the use of kind of whey-based protein supplementation in some of these horses. So that's sort of the dietary facet of management.
And is that whole slew of dietary changes kind of what you threw at this horse and recommended to this owner?
Yeah. I should say that for this warm blood, we ended up connecting his owner with a nutritionist. She implemented the changes that I described, put him on the different supplements, focused on his source of energy being a little bit higher protein and a little bit lower fat. I should also mention that he was a little bit of an over-conditioned guy, or in other words, he had a body condition of around like 7 out of 9. So he has a little bit more fat on him than some other warm bloods might. And one of the recommendations for this condition is to try to get these horses fitter in general. So if we're dealing with a horse that's, you know, on the obese side of things, it may benefit him to lose some weight, get a little bit more conditioning. And that'll kind of go into the next facet of management. And for this horse, in addition to kind of making sure his calories were coming to him the proper way, cutting back a little bit on excess calories, but also focusing on things like core strengthening. There are a couple books out there about activating and strengthening the horse's core, which focus on asking them to use their stabilizer muscles, things like those balance pads that horses can stand on, things like carrot stretches to the left, to the right, up and down, things like asking them to kind of put all their weight on one leg versus the other. There are all sorts of things that would take forever for me to describe in this podcast, but all sorts of things that can be done to try to strengthen the horse's core in addition to kind of getting him to an optimal weight and just generally improving his health and fitness. But very specifically with regard to this gelding and others that are managed for MFM, the focus is often on actually the days of work that they have per week, which sounds kind of silly, but essentially many MFM horses, one that I'm kind of focusing on for this kind of summary of the case, many horses with MFM benefit from, instead of being kept in work all week long, like say some horses with polysaccharide storage myopathy, that benefit from having no days off, very different. These MFM horses benefit from having a couple days off in many cases. And so this guy, this gelding that I keep referring to, he, instead of working 6 days a week and having Monday off, totally changed his schedule to have 3 days on, 2 days off, roughly, in that kind of pattern. So really focusing his schedule around those big lessons or those big shows, and then making sure that he gets proper rest in between. And this gelding and many others will have a history of getting kind of worse as the week goes on before interventions are pursued. And we think that horses with MFM, instead of constantly needing to be worked, really kind of get fatigued and get worse with intensity. So that was a big change for him that really helped him and can help many others to kind of focus on that couple days off. So a little bit different.
Yeah. Do you know why that is, other than just anecdotally noticing that these horses fatigue?
So I don't know if there's like a, you know, molecular reason for kind of like why these guys need a couple of days off. But it does seem, in terms of recognizing patterns in different diseases, that these horses often benefit from that type of couple days on, couple days off type of scheduling, which can really change, you know, the way that they feel and can kind of maximize what they're able to do and what they're able to enjoy and be comfortable with in their athletic careers. So it is something that can help a lot of these guys that's not very intuitive. And in addition to the days of the week, a lot of these guys benefit, especially this gelding that I'm describing, benefited from focusing on long and low work in the warm-up. So not asking for collection right away, not asking them to engage immediately, but to kind of let them be horses for the first 10 or 15 minutes of their warm-up and let them be long and low and not ask too much of them right off the bat. That seems to help some of them get a little bit more comfortable. And then when it comes time to do things like collect and engage, they're a little bit more apt to do that without those behavioral elements that I described, that balking, that reluctance, sometimes bucking and rearing even. Not this guy, but some of them, you know, get really, really uncomfortable and reluctant, and they can start to get anxious even before they're asked to do the thing, if that makes sense. So yeah, some of these guys, yeah, it's like they, you know, horses can read your mind sometimes, and they just know when their rider's about to ask them to do something and they'll start getting really worked up. And so letting these guys warm up slowly is something that can help a lot of these cases.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's kind of the mainstays of the nutritional side of things, and then also sort of the scheduling of athletic events and intensity of lessons and things like that in horse shows, as well as that kind of like long and low and just keeping these guys as fit as you can is sort of the crux of myofibrillar myopathy management.
And was that program, was that strategy effective for this horse?
It was, yes. Thank you for asking. It for this guy, it really helped him. And something that is important for kind of giving it a chance to work would be the time frame in which you would expect improvement. And the nice thing about myofibrillar myopathy is that compared to some other things, and if we've ever had, like if you've ever, like me, had a dog that's allergic to something and you have to do a food trial for 8 weeks, it takes forever. But one of the nice things about the MFM management is that most horses will respond within 4 weeks. So if you give it a solid college try for a month, generally you should see improvement if you're going to. And there's not a ton of data yet, but in one of Dr. Valberg's investigations, she identified about 70-ish percent of warm bloods improved with the management strategies that I described. And of course, not every horse is going to improve all the way. Some might just improve a bit, but it's something that can help some of these horses. And this particular gelding benefited tremendously from it and was able to get back to the horse that he was before these clinical signs started. So it was a really kind of rewarding case for us as clinicians, but also certainly for the owner and hopefully the horse as well, who seemed a lot more happy in his work, which was really nice to see. And, you know, we don't know that all horses are going to improve, but when they do, it's a really nice thing to see and experience. And horses are not limited to one problem. So certainly, you know, we see MFM in some of our cases, not this gelding, but other horses that are also lame, that are also ataxic. If we can address the underlying myopathy, sometimes they're better able to kind of deal with whatever else they have going on. So horses that have one problem are a lot better able to compensate when something else happens. But if they have more than one problem, it gets a lot harder to kind of keep the wheels on the bus. And so even when myofibrillar myopathy is not the only problem, if we can at least help that, sometimes that can help some of these horses with comorbidities kind of better manage them.
Yeah. And gosh, it just makes me think back to some of the horses that I've had over the years that where I chalked something up to a behavioral training issue. And, you know, there might be something going on at the cellular level that I never even considered.
I agree with you, Alex. I think so many of us go back to, you know, when we were kids and riding and how, you know, you were dealing with horses that had all sorts of behavioral issues, or it was the rider doing something. And I think at the end of the day, horses don't wake up and decide to be behaviorally
going
to
be naughty today.
Yeah. There's something going on, and it's really rewarding when we're able to identify what that is and even better address it and see some improvement. And it's an interesting disease, this one. I should mention that although this warm blood is kind of the focus of this discussion, that there is sort of another flavor, if you will, of myofibrillar myopathy in Arabian horses, which are not a horse that commonly makes up my caseload at New Bolton Center. But it's worth mentioning, we do see myofibrillar myopathy in Arabian horses. It tends to present a little bit differently, with sort of a more severe presentation akin to tie up and exertional rhabdomyolysis, a little bit different. But it is something to kind of keep in your pocket if you end up assessing Arabian horses where myopathies might be at play.
So do we know why these breeds are seem to be predisposed to this condition? I know you said there wasn't yet a genetic test, but does it tend to just occur in warm bloods or Arabians?
Good question. I don't know that we are yet aware of why we only see it in a couple breeds. An interesting thing that I didn't mention earlier, although the gelding that I've been talking about, he was, you know, around 10 years of age, it brings up a good point that in addition to being something specific to a few breeds, it's also something that we will only see oftentimes in horses at least 8 and older. So that's something to keep in mind when you're selecting cases to screen for this disease or having it high on your list, because muscle biopsies will often be negative for this disease under the age of 8. And in a couple cases where we really highly suspect it and they're just so classic, we have attempted just managing these horses as if they were MFM without doing the biopsy or getting a negative biopsy back and seeing some improvement. And I don't know that anyone knows why exactly we may not see this happen until later stages of age or why we only see this in certain breeds. But as of yet, there's not a genetic test. So that kind of limits our ability to extrapolate that a little bit.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, briefly, is there anything else, any other advice that you would give to veterinarians or owners faced with similar cases or horses that they might suspect could have a myopathy?
Yes, I think that when we're thinking about myopathies in general, there are some myopathies or muscle diseases that we need biopsies for. There are other muscle diseases that sometimes blood work can be helpful. MFM is not usually one of those in the warm blood breeds where the muscle biopsy is kind of required to increase our suspicion and ultimately confirm our diagnosis versus in some breeds of horses, things like tie-up or exertional rhabdomyolysis, you might see alterations in muscle enzymes. So that can be a clue. There are exercise tests that can be done to increase the suspicion of some muscle diseases where exercise tests are essentially having the horse oftentimes just put on a lunge if they're trained to do so. You can lunge them for 15 or 20 minutes at a trot and take blood work before and a couple hours after that exercise and look for increases in muscle enzymes. That can help sometimes increase your suspicion of an underlying myopathy. So I think taking the horse in front of you, his breed, his clinical signs, his chronicity, and then kind of putting that information together and making your diagnostic plan. It doesn't always have to be a biopsy, but they certainly can be helpful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Colmer, for coming on and sharing this case and talking about MFM and myopathies with us today.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. It's a really interesting field, I think. And as I mentioned, it's very rewarding for sure. Yeah.
Well, I learned a lot, so I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Well, to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And thanks to our sponsor, DEKRA.